that's so exciting. All right, do you want me to do the hellos?
Yeah, yeah, if you want to introduce it, and then I can introduce myself.
All right, here we go. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Super Subcast with me, Ian Stewart, and my partner, Nader Funi.
Hello.
This is a new podcast between two friends that are going to be talking mostly about English Premier League, but everything in the football world will probably mostly get discussed eventually. You know, Nader and I have known each other for a few years now, and we definitely both have interests in the sport, and we talk about our teams a lot together. So Nader, why don't you give us a little intro for our listeners on this episode one?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Nader. I'm a massive, massive Liverpool fan, but an even bigger fan of Ian. That's not true. Ian and I, you know, started our friendship around college. I think it was my second year or my first year, his second year. And we both quickly realized we had a huge love for football and the Prem and just the world of football in general. And we were on a phone call a couple of weeks ago, just catching up, and he sprung the idea of a podcast. So we're doing something unique. Not many people are in the podcast world, so.
No, it's not a saturated place at all, especially so we just came up with the name, the Super Subcast, about 5 minutes ago, because every other name that we decided before had been taken. Like any sort of pun, there's some group of friends that already have a podcast, but this is ours, the Super Subcast. So thanks, Nader. So you're a Liverpool fan, right? How long have you been a Liverpool fan for?
Oh, since diapers. I think it's one of those instances where you sort of support the team your dad supports. My old man has been a Liverpool fan since, you know, the 70s. I think when he was around 8 years old, and when you watch an old guy just screaming and running around the house after a goal gets slotted in, you sort of just, that's it. You get that. That's buy-in right there.
Oh yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think we both have two dads who are maniacs when it comes to sport. I know your dad like flies to Liverpool every once in a while to catch a game. Does he still do that?
I think with COVID, he's definitely like lessened it a bit, but I think he's been pushing vaccines more than the CDC, so he could fly out to Liverpool once COVID dies down a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who do you support? Do you want to tell the people?
Yeah. So I'm Ian Stewart. I'm a Celtic Football Club supporter. Just like Nader, my dad kind of brought me into the fandom, the support, when I was, I don't know, maybe like 1 or 2 years old. You know, there's pictures of me when I'm like 3 years old, like just decked out like Celtic room, and I'm next to like the European Cup and stuff. So yeah, I've been a supporter my whole life. I still follow every day. Like some days I don't know about you, dude. I just wake up sometimes, and the first thing I do is I just type in like Celtic FC into Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see what's going news. On.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've read the Wikipedia page like at least 16 times over for Liverpool. Lots of shits with nothing else to do on my phone.
Oh, I do that all the time with just like random like League One teams and like even like National League teams. Cause like some of those clubs, like they go all the way back to like the late 1800s and you've never heard of them before.
They've got history.
So yeah, two friends just want to talk about football. How we want to do this podcast is, we're probably going to try to do like an episode once a week. In terms of the format, we want to do like a set prompt, like a discussion that we're going to have. And then, you know, after having that discussion, however long it's going to be, we're going to talk about the games from the previous week that just happened, and then probably the upcoming games in the English Premier League. And then if there's something interesting going on in, you know, Champions League or Europa League or what's the other one called now? The new one?
Oh, who even cares? The one Arsenal barely makes it to.
No, that's Tottenham right now.
The European Conference League or something like that.
Yeah, the Conference League. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Tottenham doesn't, is it worse if Tottenham doesn't win that or if they win it? They're in a lose-lose situation.
I think it's a stain either way, really. I wouldn't want that in my trophy case.
No, sad thing is, though, Celtic might get third in the group and get put in that. So we're going to have to try it. Anyway, yeah, Nader, do you want to introduce our first topic today that you came up with?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be talking about the revolving door effect of the Premier League, and what we mean by that is, really, since the inception of the league and big money being infused into the Premier League, there's been this pattern of a select or more than a select group of clubs that constantly find themselves almost going through the cycle of promotion and then finding themselves being demoted again after a couple of seasons. And we want to explore why that is. Is it because the spending power of some of the foreign owned clubs have far exceeded what the clubs that do get demoted can compete with? Or is it just a matter of quality of football? I mean, we'll be looking at it from many different facets, but we think it's really fascinating, and we want to assess the impact on the health of the game that it has and what it might mean for the future of the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely. And so what Nader and I did is we kind of looked at, since the inception of the Premier League in 1992, have there been any, you know, historical trends in terms of like total gross and net spend on transfers that have kind of translated teams getting relegated? And when you think of today's world, like Nader, what teams do you think of that are like kind of that revolving door right now in the relegation to the championship, and then they're kind of right back?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you and I said 3-2-1 and started talking at the same time, we'd rattle off the same ones. It's your Norwich, your West Brom, your Fulham. Those are the ones that always come to mind for me. So, and I'm trying to think of who else. But I mean, honestly, those are the core three. I always feel like I see them come in and out. Yeah.
Yeah, you could even argue like maybe Newcastle. I know they had a few rough patches the past decade.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I looked at the numbers. I sent you that spreadsheet, right? Mm-hmm. And I looked at I looked at their gross spend essentially. And when the three teams got relegated from 92 to currently, the average spend in terms of gross spend, they were at the 14th position. So most of these clubs are like below average in terms of spending, which kind of makes sense. If you don't bring in more quality players, you're not going to be improving at all. Mm-hmm. There have definitely been some outliers on terms of the other side. Like some teams have spent the most money, but also have still gotten relegated. Like which one was it? I think it was in 19.
Was it Blackburn?
Yeah. In 1998-99, Blackburn Rovers, who used to be a powerhouse in the Prem. When it first, you know, was coming out, they spent the most money in that season. And I thought that was like really astonishing. Even on the flip side, like when you look at some of the champions, like I'm pretty sure Man United in 1995 and 1996 spent the least amount of money in the Prem and won it.
I think, yeah, that's one of those situations where they probably had really good squad harmony.
Yeah.
Prior, they would have probably, I mean, 95, you're talking about that massive class of players that were going through United at the time. So they probably didn't need to do all the spending that other clubs had to do, because they already had that young group of players coming through under Sir Alex Ferguson. So they already had that strong squad harmony going for them. But yeah, I mean, it's a crazy topic, because since its conception in 92, the Premier League has seen 35 different clubs experience relegation. So, I mean, and then if you talk about multiple demotions, you know, there have been 64 demotions in total. So there's two ways you can look at it. A, it's a very competitive league to stay in, and it's very cutthroat. And then B, you sort of have this entrenched group of clubs that have stayed in the Prem since 92 or even earlier. I mean, like, Arsenal's last top flight relegation was in 1912, I mean, pre-First World War. But yeah, you have this group of 6-7 clubs that have sort of etched their names in the Prem, and then all the others are sort of fighting for their position to stay in.
Yeah, so do you want to kind of touch on those, the teams at the very top that are just kind of, you know, seem to keep getting the top spots every year, year in, year out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the ones that would come to mind for everyone are Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester United, Tottenham, Chelsea. And then the one that often gets ignored, and you and I were talking about this while preparing for the podcast, Everton. Yeah, I mean, Everton have been in the top flight since the 50s. So they definitely deserve their name up there. And then, funnily enough, I think Brighton, since being promoted, has yet to experience relegation. So
really?
Yeah, that's the funny outlier. I think what was it? Was it Brighton started in the league in the 17-18 season, if I'm not mistaken?
And that sounds about right.
Yeah, and they've been hanging out since.
Yeah, that's one of those clubs that are kind of in the bottom half barrel right now of the Premier League. When you think about it, they're on the up, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think I wouldn't put them in that. I wouldn't put them in that list of the top clubs. The one club I would put up there is Leicester. Leicester, yes. I think, are starting to write their name in the Premier League as like in that top dog kind of group.
Yeah, I think they're right on the brink of it, you know, definitely winning the Prem in the 15-16 season definitely had a huge impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
Speak about recent news. I don't want to get off topic, but did you see Watford this week?
The game against why am I blanking right now? Watford played Leeds, didn't they?
They did, and they lost. I think they lost 1-0. But did you see that they sacked their manager and who they're bringing in?
Oh my gosh, who are they bringing in?
They're bringing in, well, I don't think it's confirmed yet, but they're bringing in Rainey, Claudio Rainey.
No way.
Yeah, Leicester manager, yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're going to get some more, opera singing in the Prem.
Oh man, that's a great video when he did that.
Yeah, who did he bring in? What was his name?
Wasn't it like some famous Italian singer to,
yeah. Claudio Ranieri, he brought in the name is, I think, was it Andrea Bocelli?
That is probably just
one of the most magical videos I've ever watched. Puts me to a peaceful sleep.
That's when they were at an all-time high though, Leicester. They're struggling this season, obviously.
Yeah.
My question to you, Nader, is do you think this trend is going to continue with the, you know, the teams that are getting relegated every year coming right back up to the Premier League from the Championship?
Oh, absolutely. I only think it's going to get worse. I mean, to an extent, I think just with how much money is being infused into the game, specifically the English game, you can almost put a price on a trophy. I pulled up some numbers here, and I don't want to rattle off numbers, but if you look at a club like Chelsea, their net transfer expenditure is around 1.4 billion pounds. Net spend, after transfer income, they're at about 500 million pounds. And with the 8 trophies that they've won, their net spend per trophy is around 62 million pounds. And I mean, if you look at the trends,
it's actually not that bad. I thought it'd be way worse.
Yeah, I mean, on the other end, you have clubs like Tottenham that have a net spend of 168 million pounds who have yet to win a trophy. But then Arsenal with 4 trophies, that's about 117, 118 million pounds based on their net spend. So
yeah. And you're talking you're talking about from the beginning since when the Prem has been created, right? 92.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you could almost put a price on a trophy, and the numbers I just rattled off are exuberant. You can't expect a Southampton that will probably have a transfer budget of like 28 million pounds on a good year, and they'll try to bring in 3 or 4 players with that money and try to maximize it, whereas mm-hmm. a club like Liverpool will be spending 77 million pounds on Virgil van Dijk in one go. I only think that the trend is worsening. And it opens doors to other discussions. I mean, we saw the Super League discussions that came out. And I think the owner's perspective there was, we're spending all this money into something that's already very difficult to make profitable, which is the world of football. We want to be able to protect those investments. So why not shield our teams by having them play at the top level? Well, on the reverse side, more and more English clubs are being foreign owned. Mm-hmm. So let's say an Aston Villa or any club that's threatened of relegation, that's foreign owned, they could come out in the future and say, you know, why don't we just do away with the whole system of relegations and promotions in the Premier League and allow the other tiers to operate normally, but we shield the Premier League to protect our investments, because we don't want to have to inject that much money into our team only to watch it get lost if we do get relegated. I know I'm kind of like dipping my fingers into a lot of different topics here, but I just think, you know, with the number of clubs that do invest exuberant amounts of money only to find themselves in the championship the next season, you want to begin shielding that investment, and sometimes through extreme measure.
Definitely. I think from a business standpoint, from the owner's point of view, like the whole Super League thing made total sense, but it would have just killed everything. It would have been it would have just been the last magic of the game, just gone. Like, I probably wouldn't have been doing this podcast if that happened, because what would have been the point of it? No relegation or nothing. And there are clubs, like, I'm pretty sure, like, Bournemouth, when Eddie Howe was there, when I think he got relegated, he spent like 150, 200 million over 2 years and still got relegated. So sometimes when you see these clubs come up from the championship, like Norwich this year, like, I think they only bought like one or two players for like a spend of like maybe 20 million. You know, they, I don't know if they're just like accepting the fact that they're going to get relegated and they're okay with it, because if you get relegated from the Prem, you get like a fat parachute payment of like 50 million quid or something.
Yeah.
And then you can, all you can do is just, you know, get relegated to the championship and then just try to retain as much talent as you can. You know, maybe some one or two players will get scooped up by some Premier League teams. But you can just sweep through the championship. Like, West Brom is doing it right now. West Brom will be back in the Prem next year, no doubt. And Norwich will be relegated this year, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, back to that point, like, Bournemouth spent a lot of money and found themselves relegated. And then on the other end of the coin, Sheffield United had spent very little money, almost no money, and kind of depended on their side that brought them up from League One into the Premier League and had a really good first season. I mean, their inaugural season was great, but then you could kind of see the momentum die right after Project Restart, when the teams had come back to playing after the pandemic. Something just wasn't clicking in that Sheffield United team.
I was pretty surprised when they got relegated, but they were horrible. They couldn't create nothing. They couldn't score. They were letting really loose goals in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chris Wilder, I think, did really well with the players that he had, but you can't be relying on Billy Sharp, who was probably a great League One championship player, but he just didn't have that extra step that you need as a Premier League player to really excel. And that's why he found himself more on the bench. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you're totally right. Some clubs come in, they do spend the money, and maybe they don't do it too wisely and they find themselves being relegated. And then others just don't have the money to spend and likewise find themselves being relegated. So is it a secret sauce with those top seven, top six clubs that we talked about? I think it's just the ability to consistently spend massive amounts year over year.
Definitely. Yeah. But there are some clubs, with that exception, where you just spend so much money, and you kind of brought up the whole Tottenham point where they just spend so much money and they're still trophyless. So after like more than a decade, how long have they been without a trophy? Like 13 years or something? I think they won the League Cup in like 2007 or something.
I think Tottenham last won a trophy. Yeah, it was 2008. And that was in the League Cup. So 2008. My God.
Yeah. I mean, if they just would have won that Champions League final against your team, it would have been a totally different story. But, you know, that's football. That's how it goes.
Yeah. Well, I think Pochettino was kind of happy that they lost it. I hate to say it, but.
Really? Probably, you think so? No way.
Oh, yeah. He probably walked away with a nice little severance package and
was
drinking out of coconuts with little umbrellas in them. But yeah, and then there was the whole saga about him coming back to Tottenham. But anyway, I think Tottenham's issue in particular is there's always something not clicking in the squad.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in great players. But players with different intentions and different styles of play and different visions for how they want to play. And sometimes that doesn't click with the manager. And now they found themselves in a position where you have players in the team that obviously want to leave, or players in the team that obviously have a different vision for how they want football to be played.
Mm-hmm.
And there always seems to be a misalignment. And, you know, the players that I always think about are like the Dele Alli, more recently Harry Kane with the whole Man City saga. I'm not saying that he's playing worse, but I, you know, there's definitely like an indication that he's, I mean, he missed some training sessions. He didn't show up to some training sessions. He's been a yeah. little less alert. Yeah. Like if that doesn't tell you anything. But I mean, like I said, like Levy, I think Levy's a wise owner. He's just been a little unlucky recently. I mean, like, I know Nuno wasn't his top choice.
No, I like Nuno, though. I actually like him.
I like Nuno, but I don't think he's what Tottenham needs. I think Tottenham are trying to establish themselves as a more serious title-contending club. And I think Nuno's very good at what he does with a club like Wolves, with all due respect. He's very good at managing like the mid-table club, bringing a team up from the championship. I don't see him pushing a club to the next level, and competing yeah. for the Premier League, for the Champions League, which is what Tottenham should be doing.
Yeah, they definitely should be with, you know, that stadium they just built. It's an amazing stadium. Yeah, I think, I don't know if Nuno will last there, but I definitely see like a Graham Potter from Brighton making that next step to like that kind of club and maybe being successful. But we'll see. Anyway, you know, you kind of talked about top four. I also have some data points on what it takes to get top four, because that's all some teams kind of care about. So to get top four since 1992, you've had to have spend an average be the top six gross spend. So for first place, it was six. For second place, it was fifth in terms of gross spend. Third place was fifth. And then fourth place had an average of eight.
Wow.
So, yeah. And again, there are some outliers, but that's going back all the way to 92. So if you really want to get into that, I think it's going to just get even higher, you know, to get that top four and even more in the future. Because like, if you look at like a team like Chelsea, like, you know, coming off winning the Champions League in the summer, have an amazing squad, great manager. They have like 50 million, you know, players under the age of 20 who they're selling for like just like $30 million, like whatever, like £3 million. Like it's no big deal. And they're bringing in Lukaku. Like, how are you supposed to compete with that? And how, like Man City, how are you supposed to compete with that when they're owned by owned by a literal country?
That's a farce.
You know, I'm really sick of Pep just saying, oh no, we can't spend the money. We can't bring in Erling Haaland for 150 million. It's like, yes, you can, because
you absolutely can.
You absolutely can, because one, financial fair play is a joke. They always figure a way to balance the books. I don't even think anyone really looks at it, because like, who's auditing that? UEFA and FIFA, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, like are they owned by Qatar?
That Man City are owned by Abu Dhabi. I think they're owned by the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
And then the Qataris own PSG, right?
They own PSG, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, so like how, I don't know, you're supposed to compete with that. Even Man United, like Man United are just in such a strong position through their history of winning just so much under Sir Alex Ferguson. They're like the biggest, you know, I think they make the most money in terms of the world of any club. I think they're the highest value. So they can just, you know, I'm pretty sure Ollie has spent over a quarter billion dollars, maybe half a billion dollars already, and he's only been there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look, I think with the topic of the podcast, I don't think we're saying anything too groundbreaking, like more money means staying in the league. I think the angle that we're taking it at is you know, what does this mean for the health of the league? Like, okay, we're talking about the top six now in a comfortable position, but I mean, there is no way that Liverpool and Arsenal are going to be able to keep up the pace with Man City. And then from a European perspective, PSG and their spending, and then Abramovich's spending. So, you know, that top six starts to shrink a little bit. And yes. I say that based on, you know, what we see in other leagues. I mean, if you look at La Liga, there's only three teams that haven't been relegated from La Liga. So I guess we have the upper hand there with six or seven clubs. But I think the only clubs that haven't been relegated from La Liga are Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Atletico Bilbao. So So, I mean, and you know, Real Madrid has had the backing of the royal family historically, and you know, have had very wealthy owners. Barcelona likewise. So, you know, is that what the future of the Premier League is destined to be? Just a constant two horse race. Now, what's nice is we're like six or seven games into the season at the moment. I think at point of recording this, it was match day
seven.
Yeah.
Yep.
At point of recording this, and it looks good. It looks competitive. I mean, Brentford have had a really encouraging start. You know, there's definitely a lot of head to head going on between City, Chelsea, Liverpool, but you know, once I think February, as everyone says, is that point where you really start to see when all the players have sort of been put through that grueling winter calendar, who's going to sit out on top. But, you know, we talk about a relegation revolving door. What about on the upper end of the league? Are we just going to constantly be subjected to a Barcelona, Real Madrid type scenario where the outcome is just, you know, one or the other?
I mean, I think going forward this next decade between, you know, 2020 and 2030, I think it's really just going to be 3 to 4 teams. I think it's going to be your Manchester clubs, you know, Man City, Man United, and Chelsea. And I think Liverpool will always be there because they're a well-run club, but you just don't spend the sort of money those clubs do every window, you know?
No. Yeah. Yeah, and you can tell. I mean, there's so much anxiety among the fans all the time. As a Liverpool fan standing in the periphery, I can tell you on all of the forums and the boards, Liverpool fans were just kind of, you know, begging every day, when are we going to make a signing? When are we going to bring in someone? There was a lot of anxiety when Gini Wijnaldum had left. Now, we do have great players in the Arsenal in the midfield, but still, it's become a matter of like bolstering the squad and signing for the sake of signing, just to keep up with the other clubs making signings. But I think Klopp said it best. You know, what we didn't make in signings, we sort of gained in squad harmony. But yeah, I mean, regardless. Wait,
what does that mean? Like, he didn't bring any new faces, so everyone's just like happy to have.
Yeah, I mean,
back together.
I suppose. I mean, bringing in a new player, I think, introduces its own issues. Like, I think it brings it kind of shifts the dynamics because you have more competition on the training ground. I think you fight harder for your spot, but you know, some people can get discouraged too. I don't know the mentality of a professional footballer. Like, I'm not there, but I'm sure.
What? It adds. Really?
Intramural champion, baby.
Got the t-shirt to prove it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got it hung up somewhere on my wall. That was my athletic peak. But I think you're right. I think it's going to start shrinking to four clubs and start to move more and more concentrated to a couple of clubs.
I agree.
Yeah,
I definitely agree. And it's a damn shame because I really think people always say like it's taking the magic out of the sport, but it really kind of is. I don't know if that's just because we're getting older. I remember like watching in the early, you know, 2000s, like even like watching Arsenal, like a lot of those guys that they got, you know, the Bergkamps, Donnarumma, you know, they weren't like blockbuster, like crazy signings in terms of money, but I don't know. I just think those days might be kind of gone. The only thing I can kind of hold hope onto is, you know, Leicester City in 2015 winning it. But like that group of players they had were amazing. You know, they had Mahrez, they had Conte.
Vardy.
I mean, yeah, Vardy.
Fuchs. Like just
banging goals out like it's no tomorrow.
Schmeichel. Yeah, I mean, that was a great 11. And what's amazing is they stuck to that 11. I think at the end of that season, I read somewhere that Leicester had only made 22 rotations to their squad in total. Whereas on average, a club will make like 80 plus throughout a season.
That's insane. That's like crazy luck. Cause I don't know how players aren't getting injured going full force, you know, week in and week out. And that's why I think about Liverpool right now. is like you guys, man for man, 11v11, could win the Prem against anyone. Yeah. But like it's going to be a war of attrition this season because like Chelsea and Man City, like they just have so many players where you're kind of talking about like they are all fighting for their spots like every day. Like Ben Chilwell coming in from into Chelsea, you know, 50 million pound player, like got benched for Alonso for a few games this season.
Mm-hmm.
So like examples there. And I just like Liverpool, like you already have an injury with that. Who was that kid that went down?
Oh, Harvey Elliott. Heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
He's back in the gym though. Yeah, he's back in the gym. Is he? He's 17, 18 years old. His body's healing twice as fast as other players are. So he'll be back soon. It was just discouraging because he was obviously part of Klopp's plans. You know, you start him against Chelsea, that kind of tells you, this guy has a pretty important role to play in this team.
Definitely. So I want to ask you, I don't know if we've done a good job talking about this topic, but I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, I've like kind of meandering. It's been fun.
It's our first episode, guys. We'll get better. You know, I'll actually take notes before next time instead of just coming up my mind. So I want to ask you, where do you think we're seven games into the Prem? Where do you think who's going? Who's getting knocked out of the bottom three teams? If you had to make a prediction right now,
That's a good question. I mean, I want it to roll off the tongue, but it's honestly, Leeds is kind of scaring me. I think
really,
I think they've had a pretty poor start to the season. Just not scoring, losing a lot of matches they should be winning. But I think Norwich are definitely gonna go down. Burnley have had a really poor start, but they have so much faith in Sean Dyche, and so do I. Mm-hmm. So I could see them kind of fighting and maybe giving Southampton and Watford a scare. But yeah, Leeds need to pick it up. Very poor start to the season. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to bring yourself to December, January, that low in the table, because you just set yourself up for failure February onwards. But let's say, okay, to answer your question, three going down. I'm going to say Norwich, Newcastle, and Southampton.
That's hilarious, because I think those are my three as well. Definitely Norwich. So here's a funny thing. So there were four games on this Saturday morning that I could have watched. I only have one TV. So I could have watched Chelsea, Southampton, Wolves, Newcastle, Leeds United, Watford, or Burnley and Norwich. And guess what game I decided to watch?
Let's hear it.
Burnley, Norwich, 0-0.
You masochist.
Turf War. Oh, yeah. Man. Even Sean Wilder was there. He was looking. He's like, what club am I going to be taking over for in a couple months? But I mean, Norwich are horrible. They are like, they're bad. Like, they don't have like any, they can't create like any chances. And this is the thing in terms of spending, like they're relying on like Pookie to have, you know, that one season he banged like 20 goals in a few years ago, they're relying on him to do that again. And he's just not getting enough service. They just don't have enough firepower, and they just let in like a lot of loose goals. And I agree with you. I know Burnley is in the relegation zone right now. It's only been seven games, obviously, but I really think they have like a structure and they really believe in their manager.
Mm-hmm.
And like, with those kind of teams, like they're just so physical. They'll just whip in like 20, 30 balls into the box and have Chris Wood just, you know, muscle someone out and get a goal. Like, I don't know if you watched them play against Leicester, but it was exactly like that. They were just like very physical. You know, they're very well organized defensively. So I think when you're in that bottom three, if you can defend, you have structure, you can survive. So yeah, I'm not worried about them.
Yeah, it hasn't been an easy start to the season either. I mean, we Liverpool played them. Everton have had a really good start to the season. Arsenal, Leicester, and they've got Man City coming up. I mean, they should have picked up the points against Norwich, in my opinion. But they've got Man City coming up, so it's not an easy start to the season per se, but as the season progresses, they're going to start playing those middle of the table clubs, and they should start picking up the 1 point, 3 points from those games, especially at home.
Definitely. And you know, I look at Newcastle and they're just, I just have this feeling they're going to go down. I just don't think they're clicking either. And honestly, I have this theory that you should want Newcastle go down in terms of you, Nodder, to be selfish. Because picture this, Newcastle goes down. It's August, late July, maybe. You get a tweet, £40 million, St. Maximin, he's in Anfield, he's holding the red shirt next to Klopp.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I really like the Longstaff brothers at Newcastle. I think Dwight Gayle could definitely have, like, a restart to his career because he was really good. His first couple, like those first couple of seasons with Crystal Palace when they got into the Premier League, he was just a fun player to watch. Yeah, St. Maximin, my gosh. I don't know, where would he fit in our midfield though?
Oh, I think he would just back up Mane.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, I would definitely think Klopp's sticking him out in the wing and just having him. I love watching Liverpool play because it's literally just like three play. It's like your top three players just cherry picking the entire time.
Yep. Yeah. They're just so quick and so clinical.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we can get in the game. So I don't know if you have any final thoughts on our prompt or our topic for this week.
I think my last thought on our topic, just so we can go back to it, is this, you know, like one other thing that I worry about for not only just the clubs that find themselves sort of shuffling between the leagues or, you know, kind of sitting in the bottom half of the table consistently. It's the price of players. You know, when you have big clubs that are constantly inflating the price of players and paying exuberant transfer fees to bring in these players, naturally, the price, you know, the residual effects of that, the price of other players begins to also go up because that's just the landscape of the market. So if you're paying £100 million for a Jack Grealish, say, you know, what does that mean for a transfer coming out of Southampton or a player coming out of Palace or a player coming out of the Championship? You know, those transfer fees start to go back up too. So, you know, £19 million in the past, which used to buy, you know, a West Brom, like six players, becomes much less powerful. So that's one of my other things, you know, that.
Oh yeah. It's ridiculous.
Me. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I think you brought this up the other day. It all started with Bale going to Madrid. And then, you know, obviously when Neymar went to PSG for that ludicrous amount, it's really ruined everything. I thought COVID would kind of bring everything back down to earth and maybe kind of break the system a little bit for some of those clubs that are so levered up, like, you know, Man United, like they're like £500 million in debt. Uh-huh. I thought that it would have an effect, but I think they're just so big and they have so much assets. They can just stay levered up for as long as they want to.
I always try to think what was that sort of like click. And, you know, I mentioned Bale, but then there was also Fernando Torres, who was like a £50 million signing to Chelsea from Liverpool, which was also insane at the time. You know, Andy Carroll, £35 million, most expensive English player at the time.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a gradual rise from like those early 2000s. But I don't know. I mentioned it just because it was the one that stuck out, that Bale fee to Real Madrid. I remember reading that and I was like, what the fuck, you know?
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. And even like you could spend 40, £50 million like on a player. And it's not like, it's still not enough if you want to like challenge for the top spots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Arsenal, they bought Ben White for like £55 million or something.
Yeah.
Is he a £55 million player? In my opinion, no, but maybe he'll turn into one. And then, you know, my final point I want to kind of make is, you know, when you get relegated, you get these parachute payments. I don't know the exact number, but I think the idea behind that is if a team gets relegated, they can still afford to pay their players the high wages they get once they get to the Prem. But in doing so, those players are just so far superior to the Championship. And the Championship's a really hard league to win. But it can't be coincidental that the same teams that are getting relegated are coming back up a year, two at max. And there are some teams that do fall off and are just kind of in the championship blender for years. But
yeah, I mean, like Sheffield kind of sitting, I think bottom half of the table right now, in the championship. I think they're sitting at 14th at the minute. Same thing with Sunderland falling to League One. So yeah, you're totally right. It's either you kind of rotate or cycle and find that rhythm,
mm-hmm.
or you just, you know, you churn downwards and you find yourself in this kind of gnarly cycle. But yeah. What are you looking forward to for match day 8? What's the stick out game for you?
Before I move on to that, I just want to talk about what the championship table looks right now, and it has a few of the teams. So first place with 25 points is Bournemouth. Second place is West Brom with 22, and they're in 11 games. Coventry, surprisingly, they're in 22 points in third place. It'd be nice to see them back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably been since the 90s, since they were in here, maybe the early 2000s. And the number one team I want to come up this year, who's currently sitting in fourth, is Stoke City. The
That's
Potters.
A name I haven't heard in a while.
Oh, dude, I just love, you know, the Rainy Knights and Stoke. No,
the Rainy Knights and Stoke. Yeah.
And then in fifth place, you have Fulham. So, you know, we kind of mentioned Bournemouth, West Brom, and Fulham as those teams that keep going up and down. And they're it looks like it's going to be kind of the same story again.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you've made your point. I think just reading off that table, I know it's still early and they have a much more grueling season. But yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's a tougher season. But yeah, usual suspects.
Usual suspects.
Yeah, yeah. Bournemouth, West Brom, Stoke.
So let's jump into that. Was a good discussion.
Thanks.
I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
you get a gold star. Let's talk about some of the, we don't talk about all the games, but let's talk about some of the games that happened last week. Where do you want to start?
I think one that I want to talk about just because I am loving watching them play right now is Brentford West Ham.
Oh, I love watching Brentford.
Oh my gosh, that the clutch injury time goal. They didn't really dominate. Yeah. They didn't dominate the game. They had, I mean, I know they were away, but they had much less of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely playing just far more defensive the whole time. Picked up more yellow cards, had fewer shots, but still, I think there's a lot of merit in that, because when you go away, you have to expect that you're going to play less on the offensive side, but you have to be able to manage the game very well. And I think they did a terrific job.
Yeah. I think Brentford as of right now are the team of the season. They're definitely outperforming. They're a well-managed team by Frank. They have a game plan. Obviously, they're hard to beat, and they have two just monsters up front with Ivan Toney and Mbeumo, who just play so well together. They just run off the ball with each other, and they're so physical that it's really hard for, you know, even Van Dijk had trouble against Toney. I know he didn't score anything, but they're just a really scrappy team, and I could definitely see them finishing, you know, top half of the table this season.
I don't know what Moyes was thinking the whole time. I don't think he made a single change that whole game. He kind of just stuck to the game plan. I don't know the squad well enough to tell you what he should have done or what he could have done. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised you're sitting 1-1 against, or 1-0 down against Brentford for most of the game. And then, you know, obviously Bowen scored in the 80th minute, but I don't know why you don't kind of change the game a little bit more and use the fact that you're home to your advantage. But nevertheless,
good
game and another exciting win for Brentford.
Definitely. I think they have, I think they're about to play some of the tougher teams coming up. I think they have Chelsea next time the league takes place after the international break. Okay. Do you want to jump to, did you watch the Man United Everton game at all? It was Saturday morning.
Yeah, I caught glimpses of it. I kind of watched from when Townsend had scored onwards. It was a little bit early in my time zone, but from what I heard, you know, Man United were just kind of like, they had much more of the ball throughout the game. But, you know, Everton took their chance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on with Everton right now. I know it might be a touchy subject with you and Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
But the signing of the season right now for me is Damari Gray. I don't know if you've seen that. He got him from Leverkusen for like 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to play for Leicester, but the kid's playing lights out right now.
Wow.
And Townsend, like 30-year-old Townsend coming from Palace, like not much expectations. Like he's playing really well. That Decore in the middle for Everton, like he's a beast. I think Everton's another team that kind of has a game plan hard to beat. I don't know what Ollie was thinking for this game, because you had Ronaldo and Pogba both on the bench. Like, I don't understand why Ronaldo is not playing every single game week in, week out.
Yeah, it's funny. Sir Alex Ferguson, even, which I found surprising, came out and said that, you know, why the hell are you, why is Cristiano Ronaldo not starting against Everton?
He did. I didn't read this.
Yeah, yeah, which you have to wonder how Ollie feels about that. I mean, it's... you know, a piece of me is like, it's Sir Alex Ferguson. He can say whatever the fuck he wants, whenever the fuck he wants.
Of course he can.
Yeah, but at the same time, you don't want to start questioning the management style of the incumbent, because a lot of those players, especially Cristiano Ronaldo, is going to have that respect for Sir Alex Ferguson's word, and so are the United fans. So pressure starts to mount on Ollie.
Oh, definitely. Oh, there's huge pressure on that guy. Like, to be honest, if they don't, I think if they don't win the league this year, they should just get rid of him, because they should, with that squad, they should be winning the league.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Challenging for it.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Cause honestly, everyone kept making the Ollie at the wheel jokes, but I think he had a great season last season, and he's really unlocked and unleashed guys like Bruno Fernandes, you know, Pogba starting to find his, not starting, but you know, Pogba's found his footing, especially after like that horrendous Mourinho period. Where they just weren't getting along. But I don't know what it is. Is it his man management abilities? You know, do you have just too many talents in that club, in that squad? Is it his, you know, tactical readiness?
His lack of experience as a manager that might.
Well, yeah, that too. Yeah, he came in from, he came in from a, was it a Norwegian club?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. The only reason he's still the Man United manager is because that PSG game they won in Paris due to VAR in the Champions League. I don't know if you remember that one, but it was like a last minute handball and they beat, I think, PSG in the quarters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he's one of those managers that just isn't good enough and should probably move on. But kind of hard to get rid of a club legend unless you're Chelsea.
Yeah, they did that real quick. But, you know, I think if we're on the topic of revolving door, we could have a whole episode of Chelsea's managerial revolving door.
Oh,
yeah. That thing spins like a county fair revolving door.
I definitely think so. Let's talk about your game, Liverpool Man City. Great game. Game of the week.
Amazing.
Maybe game of the season so far, actually, too.
Liverpool have had, no, I would say game of the season was last week's Liverpool-Brentford, but this one was damn close.
That was a very good game too, yes.
Yeah, the power shifted between the first half and the second half. I think first half, you kind of had a switched off Man City and Liverpool needed to capitalize more on it. And then the second half switched where I think we were like on the back foot the entire time.
Really? I kind of saw it differently. I saw Man City kind of peppering Liverpool, like Anfield seemed pretty quiet at the end of the first half. Like not much was kind of happening.
You know what? I think I've got that the wrong way around. I think I think the first half is when City were definitely, putting the pressure. And then the second half is when we started like making ourselves a little bit more known. I remember in the first half, we were celebrating a corner. And a throw in. That was like the only time you could really hear the cop roar. But yeah, both, it's hard to say like with this, like who'd be more disappointed going home with the point? I think both teams are, or who'd be happy. I don't think either teams were happy with the point. I think both teams seriously wanted it. played some really good football. It was just an entertaining game. And Salah's goal, I think, is a contender for goal of the season so far.
Oh, man. Even the first goal that he completely created out of the wing, where he passed to Mane. I mean, what are you going to do when you lose those two players?
I don't want to think about that just yet. Well,
they're just everything. They're so good.
Pay them what they want. Give them a damn blank check and just pay them what they want.
Exactly. But, yeah, I think Mo had an amazing game. He diced up. I think he diced up Silva, and then he diced up Diaz and just smashed it home.
Oh, he gave him front row seats to that goal.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think 1-1, I think Man City should probably be more happy with that result. Because I know I always hear Anfield's just so hard to play at.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that. Going to the Etihad will definitely be tougher. But I was kind of shocked to see how switched off City were in parts of the game. You know, misplaced passes. Yeah. They weren't very clinical. Kevin De Bruyne, you kind of felt hints of him throughout the game.
Really? I thought he had it was the first half. He was missing passes. He had like a diving header that he just skied over the bar that you would, you would always bet on that guy scoring. And then he gets rewarded for like the floosiest own goal on Gomez, I think hit off of.
Was it Gomez? I think the deflection may have come off of Fabinho, if I'm not mistaken, or Matip.
It was one of those two.
Might have been Matip. But yeah, I mean, the standout player for me, I really enjoyed watching that game, was Ruben Diaz. Just such a commanding figure. Really, really good captain and just a great defender.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think looking forward, match day 8.
Yeah, let's look at some of the games that we have.
Leicester United. To you? Yeah, Leicester City United. That's going to be a really good game.
Where is that at? Is that at Leicester?
Yeah, that's at Leicester. Brentford Chelsea at home for Brentford. I think that's going to be a really fun one to put on. It might be a wipe. For all we know, I think Chelsea might just show up, but Brentford aren't the kind of team to give up. I mean, they're playing it tooth and nail to the 90th minute.
Oh no, they have, and they're playing at home. They have a brand new stadium. It sounds pretty loud in there. Like, I think they'll give Chelsea a run for their money. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna be watching that. Oh, awesome! We'll be watching the Man U game and then the Chelsea game afterwards. Perfect.
Fantastic.
And then Monday night. Or depending where you're at, Monday afternoon for me, Arsenal Crystal Palace, definitely be watching that one. With Vieira managing Palace now, coming back playing Arsenal, that'll be interesting. I don't know about you, I've been watching and following a lot of Arsenal content really, and we could probably have a whole topic on them and their the position they're in right now.
I don't know. I think Arsenal, there's a running joke. I'm more shocked about Tottenham, and I think the North London derby, Arsenal Tottenham, really showed the cracks in that team, in the Tottenham team.
Oh yeah. Oh, they got bullied. 45 minutes, absolutely bullied. I honestly think both those teams are just not very good. Yeah. They're good. They're not like. They won't be up with the big boys, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So score predictions for like Leicester City, Man United. You got any?
Leicester City, Man United. I'd have to say it's going to be a 2-2 game.
Really? 2-2?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Leicester have been a little bit more consistent than Man United with their scoring. But yeah, I see Cristiano starting. I could see a 2-2 game out of that one.
Yeah, Leicester need to really pick it up. I wonder if Brendan will be in trouble here, because he's had two seasons, finishing, I think, fifth both times, and that club wants to be in Champions League football. I don't know if bringing in a new manager will change that, but I think I could see a 1-0, because even Man United, like, they – they haven't really been playing at their top form either. They've had some poor results the last couple of weeks, losing to Young Boys in Switzerland. Yeah. I could see I'm gonna go 1-0 Leicester. I don't know, okay. I'm just feeling it.
Who else? Man City, Burnley. I don't even think that's worth predicting.
I'm gonna go Burnley 5-0.
Yeah. put in a tenner for that bet. You could probably quit your job if you get that.
Sean Dyche will be going down the Man City touchline, shirt off, airplane mode.
I think Arsenal Palace will be a good game. I like what Vieira is doing at Palace.
Yeah, I think that game will be – so it's at the Etihad. I'm going to go 1-1. I see a tie in that one.
City-Burnley.
Oh, City-Burnley. I don't know. I think 4-1 City.
Okay, yeah.
What do you think?
I don't even see them. I don't even see them conceding, if I'm honest.
Really? Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Here's an interesting one. Southampton, Leeds United, both kind of at the bottom of the table, need to pick up some points. It's at Southampton. I just don't know what's going on with Southampton. You look at their squad, they have some good players, but same thing with Leeds. But I think Leeds, even though the results haven't gone their way, they still just play like very fun football. You know, they mm-hmm. move the ball really well and they have some really good players like Rafinha. I think he's really good.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be a fun match day 8. Some pretty balanced games, I think, for the first time. In terms of where the teams are sitting at the table, with the exception of the City Burnley game. But yeah, dude, I episode 1 in the bag.
Episode 1 in the bag. So if anyone is listening to this, I'd be shocked already. But we're gonna come up with new topics every week, have a good discussion. If we come up with enough, maybe we'll announce at the end of every episode what next week's topic's gonna be. But I think I see this podcast just, Nod and I just having some good discussions, and hopefully it's entertaining for people to listen to.
I agree. No, it's been good fun. And even if it just ends up being me and you talking to each other, that's still a blast for me.
Yeah, I get to look at your face, once a week. that beautiful mustache. Yeah. No, dude, I think you should go the opposite. I think you should shave the beard and keep the stash.
Keep the stash, my God.
Oh yeah.
The poor people. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you should become a cop.
Hey. a Reno 911 type cop.
Oh, I love that show. Yeah, I get some aviators and some tight shorts. All right, so this has been the Super Subcast episode 1. Thank you for listening, Nader. It's been a pleasure, man. I will talk to you soon.
Looking forward to the next ones. See ya.
All right, man. See ya.